United States versus Johnson. Mr. Hess.
May it please the court, I am Frederick Hess. I represent Willard Johnson, an eighth grade dropout who has made his livelihood selling marijuana and cocaine in prior to the charges in this case. The issue in this appeal concerns a stipulation which the court entered into without investigation, made by
the court didn't enter into the
defense counsel and the defendant signed a stipulation,
and
without which the government could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that crack cocaine was involved in this case, or either beyond a reasonable doubt at trial or by a preponderance of evidence at the sentencing. What we have here is what we have too frequently in district courts these days, and that's the prosecution of street dealers. Everybody's in a hurry. We got to move the volume along. In this case, the government chose to charge the way they did. They presented two witnesses.
But there were witnesses who talked about crack.
They all talked about crack, but none of them had the ability to determine whether it was crack, Your Honor.
What do you mean, the ability to determine?
Well, the case law says that by chemical analysis we can determine qualitatively.
Oh, but the people who deal in these things and buy them, they know what crack is without performing chemical
analysis. No more than this court knows what crack is by looking at it, Your Honor. The witness did not say that he ingested it and that he tested it, nor did the FBI agent say that he tested it.
People don't test it. I don't understand you. The people who buy crack know they're buying crack.
People that are buying drugs know they're buying drugs, but they don't know they're buying crack simply because somebody represents it.
The price is different from crack and powder. I don't understand you. That's like saying you don't know if you're buying a banana unless you test it.
A banana that looks like a banana and tastes like a banana is a banana. But cocaine base is cocaine base unless you test it and find the presence of bicarbonate soda.
That's not true. If it tastes like crack and gives you a crack type high, then it's crack. You don't have to do a chemical test.
And if that were the evidence, you would be correct, sir, but that wasn't the evidence here. That's not the way the government presented its case. They used the user to buy a substance. They took that substance from the user without the user using it. They gave it to an FBI agent who came in and testified that he took the substance, and he gave hearsay testimony that it was later tested as crack, and I asked for the test. I have never been provided with anything except the Illinois State Police laboratory test, and I know the Illinois State Police laboratory does not do a qualitative analysis. So there is no qualitative analysis
to
say.
What is a qualitative analysis?
It breaks down the parts of the substance to tell you what's there.
Sounds quantitative. What do they do? What kind of test does the Illinois
gas chromatography is not done by the Illinois.
Excuse me, what do they do?
They do the simple field test by placing chemicals on the cocaine, and they find the presence of cocaine base.
And what's wrong with that test?
That tells you have cocaine. It does not tell you have crack or the presence of sodium bicarbonate, which the sentencing guidelines require to be present.
Do you have any cases that would support your theory that stipulations made in the course of a trial have to be judged by the court to be with knowingly and intelligently made?
Yes, sir. The Garrett case here in the Seventh Circuit.
In trial
requires that a judge make a determination that the defendant is admitting knowingly and intentionally that its substance is crack. He did not do that here.
I don't think the Garrett case quite states that, but I'm just speaking in general about the stipulations, regardless of crack or anything else.
Well, the Garrett.
Don't you participate in trials in which stipulations are made all the time and there's not a requirement? Never been a requirement to find that it's knowingly and intelligently made.
Very often I do, and they're tangential stipulations to convenience, the absence of witnesses, or one thing or another, not to the actual fact issue that is determinative of a sentence that rises from 33 months to 168 months. in the middle of a trial in which the government didn't present a lab.
For example, about a typical stipulation in a bank robbery or bank fraud case would be that the bank was, you know, insured by the FDIC. That would be a typical stipulation. It goes to an element of the crime. Are you saying that the judge has to ask the defendant whether he is knowingly entering into that, knowingly making that stipulation?
I think if the judge knows that this is an eighth grade dropout, Your Honor, and he knows about the Garrett case, he has to do that.
That's never been the practice. That's never been the practice.
Garrett dealt with a stipulation associated with a plea agreement, not trial. And there's a big difference in a plea agreement because we get into Rule 11 on that. I'm talking about a trial. Has this circuit ever required such a trial?
Other than Garrett, I do not find any authority to that.
That's not a trial case.
That's right. I mean, we don't have it, and that's where the problem comes in. Trial courts constantly receive stipulations on major issues, on minor issues, and this is certainly not an unusual situation. The stipulation as to crack.
No, it isn't. It is a choice that the trial counsel made.
Right. And so you would, I understand your position, though. There's nothing, you would like us to set up a new standard which would apply to stipulation.
I don't believe that the standard at trial should somehow be less than the standard.
Well, it's covered by a different rule. We got Rule 11 that controls taking of pleas, which requires, in some cases, higher standard. And that's what Garrett was. And the court in Garrett said, because we're covered by this rule, we're going to have to make a knowing and intelligent...
And if the court so rules, that then takes us to the second prong of the argument, that at sentence there was no evidence for sentencing, no evidence was presented,
you got the evidence in legitimately in the first place. It was a stipulation to crack.
But it's an impossibility, the evidence that's in. It's a falsehood, if you will. It can't be. It either, to be crack, it has to have sodium bicarbonate in it. There has to be some evidence that there's sodium bicarbonate in it.
Well, not
or
if
there
you stipulate isn't. That there was. If you're stipulating to crack, you're stipulating to all the aspects of crack.
Well, then that's the failure of the trial counsel. And that this is not the forum to address that. That would be 2255.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hess. Mr. Niemeyer?
May it please the court. My name is Mark Niemeyer, and I represent the United States in this matter. The question here is whether the district court committed clear error when it found beyond a preponderance of the evidence, or by a preponderance of the evidence, that the controlled substance in question in this case was crack. And judging by the questions I've heard so far, or the line of questioning, I am in agreement with the court that this case is not Garrett. This case was not a plea of guilty. This was a trial stipulation, which is different than a stipulation of facts going into a plea. The trial stipulation is made in lieu of testimony or other evidence, and it's agreed to and admitted by both sides so that a jury does not have to consider it, and the time can be used for other matters. Therefore, the district court was not wrong in considering that stipulation by itself and along with the other factors in the trial in determining that, in fact, crack cocaine was the controlled substance at issue in this case. There was a question about case law regarding a trial stipulation versus a plea stipulation. The Eighth Circuit in United States versus Daly did indicate that there's no reason to think that a trial stipulation is any less binding at trial than it is at sentencing. So in this case, the district court not only had the stipulation where everybody agreed that it was, in fact, crack cocaine, there was a litany of other evidence that the court could rely upon that made this case much more similar to United States versus Edwards, which Judge Kaney authored the opinion, and United States versus Bradley, in which Judge Evans authored the opinion. In those cases, there was other evidence to support that there was crack cocaine, just like here. The defense strategy, at least at the outset, was that the drug distributed was not cocaine at all, that it was marijuana. So the prosecution case focused very much so on the terminology used over the tapes and overhears referring to the controlled substance. And we put on evidence that the terms used were specific to crack cocaine. So that was one item before the district court. Second, it is true that the FBI agent, Agent Feely, testified that the substance was in fact crack. And while Mr. Hess calls it hearsay, it went in without objection and certainly in line with the stipulation when Agent Feely testified that this, the controlled substance was taken to the lab and confirmed to be crack cocaine. That was before the district court. Next, the confidential informant testified that the terms used, that the substance bought and turned over to the FBI was in fact crack cocaine. Interestingly here, not only do we have the stipulation by the defendant, but we also have in the overhears the defendant using the terms solid piece, 20, 50, those terms that apply to crack cocaine. Of course, the judge and jury saw the controlled substance in its rock-like form, off-white, that was shown to the jury and displayed to them for their review and to the judge, of course, and he had seen that before sentencing.
Is the definition of crack as cocaine base, is that just the guidelines or is that a statutory definition?
I believe the guideline definition is the only definition that takes it into the bicarbonate that Mr. Hess refers to. The statutory definition does not. The crack, the term crack cocaine is basically placed in the statute to everybody understand that this is what we're talking about on the street is crack cocaine. And in this case, in fact, all the evidence I just described to you is what shows that it is, in fact, crack cocaine. Interestingly, too, I think that this court in Bradley went on to say that they do look to the defense to say if they've rebutted the preponderance of evidence in any way, shape, or form to show that it wasn't crack cocaine. And here, not only do we have all that evidence that showed that it was crack, but there was no evidence at all to show that it was not crack cocaine or it was cocaine based in some other form. So for those reasons, the stipulation, the trial evidentiary stipulation, in addition to all the other evidence at the trial, I would ask that this court affirm the district court's decision.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Niemeyer. Mr. Hess, do you have anything further? Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.